Oh, Mother Roger with his kisses always stops my breath, I vow. Why does he bite my hand to pieces, and yet he says he loves me so? Tell me, Mother, pray now do. Tell me, Mother, pray now do, what Roger means when he does so. Forever stirred I long to know. He sits me in his lap all hours, where I feel I know not what, something I never felt in yours. Pray tell me, Mother, what is that? Tell me, Mother, pray now do. Tell me, Mother, pray now do. What Roger means when he does so. Forever stirred I long to know. Hello, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. And if you're asking yourself why I am dressed in this fashion today, and why my hair is done in this way, why I'm wearing a gown, why my collar is up, and why I'm wearing this jumper, it's because, I'm challenging... I'm channeling Durham University and being a student there in 1999, where one might hear remarks such as, I'm going to go to Holothans with Charlie Blair. I'm going to go to Holothans with Charlie Blair for a cappuccino. Yeah, do you want to bring Emily along? You should bring Emily. Yeah, Emily. Oh, she's such a laugh. Oh, you must bring Emily. Oh, bring Emily. Yeah. Hey, bring Emily. Yeah, for sure. Oh, she's such a lot. Oh, yeah, I'd love to see Emily. Yeah. Because one of the things that occurred when I was at university, one of the things I was very aware of was opposite sex friendships. And they were a big part of life when you are, where I was anyway, an undergraduate. And by the time you reach your late 30s, as I am now, they are no longer a big part of life. And so that's what I want to talk about today. This basic question: can men and women be just good friends? And whether they can or not, is there an evolutionary dimension to opposite sex friendships? Are we actually perhaps even evolved to have opposite sex friendships? Now, if you believe the media at the moment, if you believe the way things have been represented for quite a long time, TV programmes like Friends or whatever, it's pretty much impossible to have a real opposite sex friendship. An opposite sex friendship will always ultimately turn into something sexual. I think I'm right in saying did almost I think all of the members of Friends have at the very least snogged, you know, French kissed all of the other members of Friends who were of the opposite sex, and this includes Monica and Ross, who, despite being brother and sister, unknowingly snogged each other when they were teenagers in a dark room or something like that, thinking that they were somebody else. So, if they're to be believed, there's always something. It will always inevitably develop into basically a relationship, into something sexual. Now, this is not was not my experience when I was at university, and it was not the experience of most people that I knew. And there were clearly these extremely intense opposite sex friendships, where males and females would develop extremely close friendships. They would be quite physical with each other, holding hands, touching each other, going for meals together, confiding in each other, kissing perhaps on the lips, perhaps even touching each other in moderately intimate ways, but in a kind of fun, kind of taking the mickey out of it kind of a way. But never or almost never going as far as snogging, and if they did go that far, then never going further than that. And I knew lots of people that had such friendships, and I think I probably had such friendships myself. And then interestingly, there would often be jealousies involved in these friendships when one member of the friendship went and got a girlfriend or went and got a boyfriend, because the opposite sex friend would perhaps in some ways be rather possessive about this person. And probably part of the reason for that was because on some level they fancied them. And on some level, they saw them as a potential boyfriend or a potential girlfriend. But for whatever reason, the gods were not in favour, the evolutionary gods were not quite in favour of that happening. And so these friendships were intent. They were all over the place. I particularly noticed them among girls that were in the Christian Union, a group in which I eventually did field work for my doctorate. I was particularly aware of it there. You'd have non-Christian girls who had male Christian friends and non-Christian males such as myself that had Christian female friends, and there would again be these almost pseudo-sexual relationships in which benefited both parties, because the single non-Christian could get some sort of quasi-sexual relationship or whatever, and so could the other party in a way that they never could with a Christian, because it would be totally beyond the pale and unacceptable. It had to be kind of secret. Anyway, it interests me a great deal, as that's what I want to look at today. Now, research by the name of Lewis has looked into this, and what he found is there are clear differences in how males and females... I mean, first of all, we can go back to the fact that if we look at research by David Buss. Males and females operate two rather different sexual strategies. The sexual strategy of the male is the more so-called R strategy, because he has nothing to lose from the sexual encounter. And therefore, it is in his interests to simply have sex with as many women as he possibly can who are young and fertile. And a sign of them being fertile is, of course, that they are pretty, symmetrical, whatever, optimal kind of facial symmetry and so on, which means they're good looking and they have good genes. And so what males will tend to do is they will tend to surround themselves with lots and lots of females whom they find sexually attractive, and they will go for the highest status or the most valuable female that they can get out of those whom they find acceptably attractive, who they can surround themselves with. Females will operate the opposite strategy. They will accrue they go for status, because the female has something to lose from the sexual encounter. She can become pregnant, she's more likely to survive, and a child is more likely to survive if she can persuade the male to invest in her and her child. And so consequently, she wants, it's in her interest to go for a high status male, to trade looks and so on for status. So consequently, she will surround herself with lots of men whom she finds attractive for status reasons, and go for the male within that group who is the most sexually attractive that she can get. Now, this seems to be reflected in the dynamics of opposite sex friendships. According to research by Lewis, men are in their opposite sex friends are primarily interested in how attractive these opposite sex friends are. That's what first got them interested in the female, that they were sexually attractive to them. As a secondary issue, their personality and getting on with them and whatever became germane. But what first got them to bother even talking to that female was the fact that they found her physically attractive. Say they saw her as a possibility for sex. With the women, again, a different issue. The looks are secondary. The thing that sparks the interest is their interest in personality, certain kinds of personality, certain kinds of status. Now, according to this research, both male and female friends valued in the opposite sex friend that the opposite sex friend was agreeable and dependable. But for men, the most important thing about the friendship was that they were able to hang around with and have access to and whatever and get to know this physically attractive female, that sexually attractive female. For the woman, the most important thing about it was basically the status of the man. They wanted to be with a man of high socioeconomic status, who they felt could look after them and protect them. And then, to a lesser extent, the physical prowess of the man. So you have these two fundamental differences. The man is looking for sex, the woman is looking for protection in opposite sex friendships. So the opposite sex friendships are literally reflecting the different dynamics of male and female sexual strategies. The man gets out of it a pretty sexy, attractive woman who he can hang around with and perhaps have potentially sexual access to. The woman gets out of it a man who will look after her and who is of high status. And that's what she finds as a woman more attractive sexually, in a way, than simply his looks or whatever. Now, what would potentially motivate these things to exist? Well, there's a number of things that we can sort of speculate on. One of them is simply bet hedging. So if a man is not in a deeply committed relationship, maybe he's in some kind of relationship, but not a deeply committed relationship, then he will have these other female friends who he will maintain and whatever, who potentially at some point he might be able to fall back on. A second thing is it could be regarded as sort of a signalling, really, of signalling his desirability, of showing to potential female mates, look how desirable I am. There are all these pretty girls that want to hang around with me and be my friend. And equally, the other way round, with the female, it's showing off to potential mates, look at all these high-status, intelligent, or, you know, tough males that want to hang around with me. So that gives me value. A third issue could simply be regarded as diversity. So an outlet, even in the context in which the male has a relationship, maybe you will find that the kind of females who he has relationships with are subtly different in how they look and in their personalities from the kind of females who are his friends. And so it permits him a kind of a diversity of sexual access or pseudo sexual access that he can kiss and touch and smell and whatever, which is something that would interest males. Equally, females, you can see the two dimensions there, the kind of male who's tough and butch and whatever, who'll protect them in fights, or the kind of male that's of high socioeconomic or potentially high socioeconomic status. And then there's different kinds of males who are attractive in terms of their status in different ways, the kind of males that are more stable and might end up being lawyers or doctors, and the kind of males that are more unstable and might be kind of artistic and that kind of thing, and they're attractive in different kind of ways to the female because they offer different paths to stay status that they can experiment with, and so therefore that would perhaps interest them in that way. So diversity, and also perhaps it could be seen as a kind of a pseudo relationship in which they can test out things not up to the point of having sex or whatever, but a sort of an outlet for certain sexual feelings that they're manifested in holding hands and kissing and touching and hugging and whatever. So a kind of outlet for frustrated single people. So there could be a number of reasons why this would potentially work. Anyway, there was another experiment that was conducted by Koenig and his team in 2007. And what they did was they went into a sort of university cafe at the University of Wisconsin, and there they interviewed different opposite sex friends. Anyway, what they found was quite interesting. They found that males tended to overperceive the degree to which female friends found them sexually attractive, and female friends tended to underperceive the degree to which these male friends found them sexually attractive. However, there was very little difference in how in the accuracy of perceptions about how the opposite sex saw them as a potential future romantic partner. So the men overperceived how the degree to which they were perceived as a short-term partner, just about sex or whatever, but they didn't overperceive how they weren't wrong about how they were perceived as a romantic partner, as a long-term partner. There was an interesting finding that if the mate value of the opposite sex person was high, so for example, if it was a good-looking female, then she was more likely to overperceive how she was regarded. So it's almost as if she knew she was good-looking, and so she thought she should be fanciable, and the man should fancy her. And equally, if it was a high-status male, you got the same kind of phenomenon. In most cases, it was found that there was some mutual sexual interest. So it implies that even if there was more sexual interest in the female on the part of the male than there was the female, than there was by the male into the female than there was by the female into the male, there was mutual sexual interest in most cases. And indeed, they found that 2/5 of people have had sex in the end with opposite sex friends. 52% of opposite sex friends state that they are sexually attracted to each other. It's been suggested that it might be adaptive to over-perceive how attracted somebody else is to you. Because if you over-perceive something, then if you overdo it, a bit like a fire alarm that's too sensitive, then you're more likely to catch all of the opportunities there are. Whereas if you under-perceive, then you'll miss things. So you could be argued that there's no evolutionary reason, and the authors couldn't understand why women would underperceive how attracted they were how attracted the opposite sex friend found them. There's very little reason to underperceive things, unless by underperceiving it somehow makes you more uninhibited and natural, and thus even more fanciable, precisely because you naively don't know what's going on. So you don't seem too desperate, you don't seem too earnest, because you underperceive it in sexual terms. So perhaps that there could be some kind of benefit. I don't know, it's an interesting point. But overall, it was found that 62% of male friends were sexually attracted to their female friends, and 45% of female friends were sexually attracted to their male friends. So there is almost certainly a sexual, at least a 1 in 2 chance with a male-female friendship that there is mutual sexual attraction. And that's sexual attraction as well, just pure sexual attraction. That's all they were asking about. It's got to be remembered that the dynamics of what is attractive is different in males and females. So with a lot of males, they might find a woman sexually attractive, and then as they get to know her, whatever, during the relationship, they'll start to see whether or not they find her attractive in terms of her character or her personality or whatever. It's the other way around with females. They'll start off being attracted to the status or the potential to gain status or whatever of the male, and then the sexual attraction in that sort of raw sense will come later. Anyway, there's definitely a sexual dimension to it. Another thing that was found was that the idea of friendship differed. So what this team did was they asked someone to imagine an opposite sex friend, and they asked them to ascribe certain terms to them, which related to friendship, or just terms such as "I find this person sexually attractive." The men were overwhelmingly more likely to just use terms about their supposed friend that implied that they were sexually attracted to them, whereas the women were much more likely to use actual friendship terms about this opposite sex friend. So it imply you could read it as saying that women genuinely see these men as friends, and men don't really see these women as friends. But I don't think it's quite as simple as that, because, as I've said, the sexual selection system of females, at least when they are not ovulating, is that they want males who can just sort of look after them and who are of high social status. Only when they are ovulating are they attracted to the to more physical sort of characteristics. Now, why stay friends? This raises another question. So one of the things that I noticed, of course, as I said, was that at university there were a lot of these opposite sex friendships, but that now, when you're old, 20 years ago it was when I was started at university, you don't really get many of them anymore. And that is a general trend. In general, these friendships break down, which is consistent, of course, with the idea that a part of them, that they are sort of sexual, and therefore it's not a good idea to pursue them when you're actually when you're married or whatever, that they are about bet hedging, and you don't need to bet hedge anymore, that they are about experimenting and so on with different sort of sexual possibilities and seeing what you like when you're young. They are about all these things. So that would be consistent with that model of how these things work. In general, they break down. They don't last after a person gets older and they get married. Then they tend to have purely friends of the same sex. Or at least they don't tend to have many friends of the opposite sex once they get married. Most of those friendships go. And if they do remain, then they tend to become far less physical and so on. Presumably, of course, a reason for this, and this is something where perhaps Friends, the TV program, gets it right, is that there is a heightened likelihood, if you have a friendship that is with someone of the opposite sex, we know that in general it's going to involve mutually fancying each other. And so consequently, you can see how that friendship would grow and grow and develop and would eventually develop into an affair. So you can see why, once people get married, then there would be reasons, for these friendships to break down, are reasons for them, perhaps even in an evolutionary sense, to not be particularly desirable. People don't need them anymore. If they're about bet hedging, experimenting, pseudo-sexual activity, that kind of thing, you simply don't need them anymore once you're married. Unless, perhaps, your marriage is on the rocks, and therefore you need to bet hedge. But in general, you wouldn't need them anymore, and therefore they would tend to break down. The fact that you'd have them would imply that you were on the lookout, and would imply potentially that you weren't fully committed to your marriage. Now, Buss, David Buss, who, of course, has looked a great deal at sexual dynamics, has himself done some very interesting experiments into this. And he looked at sexual differences in the benefits and costs of these opposite-sex friendships. Now, men found the benefit, the main benefit for men in this order was, one, that they liked an opposite-sex friend because other people respected them. So it was interesting that. So that's consistent with my idea that it's a way of showing off. It's a way of showing off that you have status, that this nice girl is interested in you. B, that it allowed them to talk openly about certain things in a way that they couldn't with their friends of the same sex or with their wives. Because with their friends of the same sex, it's generally not a good idea to be too open about your emotions, and with your wife or whatever, perhaps it's not too good an idea either. You've got to kind of be the man. And so there's a degree to which you can kind of be yourself with these opposite sex friends, which is very interesting. And the third was simply mate seeking, i.e. allowed them, presumably if they were single, to potentially find in that opposite sex friend a potential sexual partner. Those were the benefits. For females, the benefits were, again, being able to talk openly in a way they couldn't to others about certain things. Again, being with a person other people respected. So again, this is consistent with these friendships being a way of heightening your own mate value, of showing off that you can attract these high status males, and thus making it more likely that you can attain the highest status male possible. It's heightening your mate value. And thirdly, simply someone with whom to sort of dine or socialise. So the friendship aspect is evidently higher in females than males. But there were also costs to these kinds of opposite sex friendships. For men, the main cost was, one, the time invested. Of course, that's true of any friendship. But then there were two which are not true of same-sex friendships: jealousy, particularly jealousy if that other friend themselves got a boyfriend or whatever, or if you get a girlfriend and your opposite-sex friend is jealous of you, and confusion over the nature of the relationship. Is it a friendship or is it something more? With women, the main cost was perceived as jealousy, and particularly the jealousy of the male should she get herself a nice bloke. The second was cruelty, so concern over the male being nasty to her or whatever if she got a nice bloke. And the third issue was investment of time. So for men, the big issue in any, because perhaps just men are more selfish, was an investment of time. That's true of both kinds of friendship, but you see these dimensions. So you have benefits and you have costs. Now, from an evolutionary perspective, and another issue that they talk about was networking, both of them. So through having a female friend, it allows you to meet potential sexual partners who are her friends. And through having a male friend, you can better meet potential sexual partners who are his friends. And you have you're vouched for, if you like, by the fact that this person is your friend. So these are the costs and benefits. Now, Bart's argument is that if the benefits outweigh the costs, then you would expect to find cross-culturally some evidence that this was, and something adaptive, that there would be cross, you'd have historically men and women who were friends, and you don't have to go back that far in time to find. Males and females who are sort of friends. So I think, although it is a relatively new phenomenon, because there is that it's openly discussed and that it's kind of clear. I mean, some languages like Hindi have just no concept of a female being your friend. If she's a female and she's your friend, she's referred to kind of as your sister. In Muslim countries, it's impossible for males and females to freely mix. And if they do mix, it's in the context of people trying to set up some kind of relationship. So you can see how it's very, very difficult. The whole idea of males and females being friends is only really possible in a society of very high trust, in which females are very strongly trusted and are relatively independent, i.e. in the kind of society that we have in the West Now, you have to have this very high trust. Otherwise, there will always be the concern that something will happen or that something improper will occur. So I don't know whether it can be regarded as something that's deep in human culture, that's evolutionary adaptive. But if it is, there would have to be, Buss argues, you have the advantages and you have the disadvantages. The potential problems with it would have to be outweighed by the benefits. The benefits are clearly that you get, that for the man, that he gets sort of some sexual access to some extent, the possibility of sexual access, that he gets someone to talk to openly, and that he can find girls. For the women, it's being looked after, someone to sort of show off their status and things like this. But there are benefits, and there are costs. Now, as long as those benefits outweighed the costs, then it's possible that that this could have been an evolutionary adaptive strategy, and perhaps that's the case. It's difficult to say with any certainty because of the taboo nature of what we're talking about. There are definitely downsides to it. So the research indicates that men are inclined to take advantage of these friendships. So if a female is not particularly sexually attractive, but she's up for it, then the man will obviously go for it, because his standards for short-term relationships can be extremely low indeed. But basically, it's this balance between the male wanting access to sex, the female wanting protection, and it's this cost analysis. So it could be something that's evolved for, that's been specifically selected for in the human species. But it's something perhaps that would be, as I say, suppressed in societies that have very low trust, because it would be something that would be uncontrolled and difficult to tolerate. And so therefore we see it more now. But the conclusion, I think, is that men and women can be just good friends. They can be just good friends. There is no reason why these kinds of friendships should always degenerate, as it were, into some sort of sexual relationship. They can be just good friends. But there is clearly a sexual dynamic to these friendships. They are often, to a certain degree, can be considered to be pseudo-sexual relationships. And this is why, of course, then they tend to collapse when the male or female gets a partner. Although, interestingly, often they won't completely collapse necessarily. It depends how close the two people are. So they can still be there as a friendship, although you would perhaps expect it to be slightly less intimate physically or slightly emotionally or whatever, slightly more distant than it had previously been. But I would suggest that you can, men and women can indeed be just good friends, though it is potentially, in evolutionary terms, a bit of a minefield. All right, well, I thought I'd do something relatively light-hearted this week, because, of course, last week there was something on depression, and so I thought I'd go with something more light-hearted. So I hope this has been of interest, and if it's been of interest, then feel free to, or even if it hasn't, feel free to donate to me on Subscribestar, PayPal, or Patreon. And if you're interested in my books, you can, of course, see access to where you can buy them below this. If you have any, this was an idea, again, that someone suggested to me, and so if you have any ideas, please do get in touch. If you have a friend of the opposite sex, then, give her a Facebook message and ask her how she's doing and how he's doing, you know. And I'm sure nothing untoward necessarily has to occur. And we'll see you soon. And goodbye.